Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The leading characters in two recent young adult novels live their lives in different eras, but one gets the feeling that if they were to meet somehow, they'd feel a kinship. That was the case with their authors, who connected well enough that they became fast friends and undertook a book tour together.
Former Milwaukeean Brittany Cavallaro's latest mystery novel is the second in her series that updates the Holmes and Watson story. The last of August brings back Charlotte Holmes and Jamie Watson, each modern-day descendants of the famed Arthur Conan Doyle investigators.
Mackenzie Lee's latest book is called The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue and features a roguish teenager's harrowing adventures across Europe during the 18th century equivalent of a gap year between schooling and adulthood. Lee and Cavallaro joined us on a recent trip to Milwaukee. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you
so much for having us.
So these books feel like they're literary spiritual cousins, and you must feel that. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't both be here at the same time.
Sure. For sure.
Did you know of each other's work before it got to this point?
No, I actually... I found Bree's book because I had heard from friends that it was tremendously good and I should read it. It was not on my radar otherwise, even though we share a publisher. And I picked it up and I remember reading it in sort of a restaurant at a train station and just being like obsessed and consumed by it. And it's always great when you sort of like read the books of people before you know the person, because then you know you actually like the book and you're
right,
not
and you
just
don't
biased.
Have to pretend forever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, and the same with me. I love Mary Shelley and This Monstrous Thing, which is Mackenzie's first book. It's sort of this like wonderful, gothic, very smart YA novel. And I had read it. And so when she wrote me a little note on Twitter, I was like, oh my God, you're writing me. And I went to Boston for a conference and through a series of unfortunate events had nowhere to stay. Mackenzie put me up and we ended up talking until 5 a.m. that night because we were kismet. Yeah.
It's kind of nice when both of you feel like you're like tricking the other into being your friend.
Yes,
I think
exactly.
We both approached with the feeling of like, oh, I have to be careful how I phrase. I don't want to scare her off. So it worked out really well.
Yeah. Lest it becomes some kind of author version of Single White Female.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, the other thing that's interesting about this is, Brittany, your book plays out in modern day, whereas Mackenzie, your book plays out centuries ago. And at the same time, somehow they manage to feel like they could be contemporaries. I can't quite wrap my head around how you pulled that off.
I think part of it is that both of them have sort of these romantic, passionate friendships at the center. That both sort of toe the line between friendship and actual romanticism. And I think part of it comes from the fact that Bree's book is based on Sherlock Holmes, where Sherlock and Watson sort of have this romantic friendship in the source material. And my book is set in the 1700s when this idea of a romantic friendship was very popular and very sort of in vogue. And so I think the way they often feel sort of linked is because of these central relationships kind of mirror each other. And even just the dynamic between Jamie and Charlotte in Bree's book versus Percy and Monty in mine, I think, is very similar, where you have sort of a straight man and then a wildly off the rails man.
an evil genius,
yeah.
Or a wonderful rake. No, I agree. And I also think that both of our books are rooted in research, mm-hmm. And a love for some times past, even though mine is set in present day. It's drawing a lot from the late 1800s. But both of our books are secretly a romp. Right? They're both adventure stories.
And both very much genre entries that you write, these sort of very self-aware tropey mysteries, and mine is a very self-aware tropey adventure novel.
and you have used both romp and rake in the...
Not words that come up now, as often as they should.
Well, and
really.
Now I don't have to. I will cross them off.
My work here is done.
But, you know, it also struck me that you have a modern-day novel with sort of a gothic sensibility, maybe, and you have an centuries-old novel with a modern sensibility,
yeah.
Which means that they sort of meet maybe in the 1900s.
They're all hanging out in a bar in 1948.
I was going to say, we need some time-traveling fan fiction
exactly.
There.
What do you find most challenging? Both of you are writing from the standpoint of a male protagonist. What was challenging about that for you, if anything?
I don't think for me it's any more challenging than writing from a female protagonist, primarily because all of my characters are living imagined circumstances and have sort of a background and even an experience with identity elements that I share with them that is different than my own. So for me, writing a man is just sort of like one more thing you have to sort of add on top of a very complex identity that you are imagining what it would be like to be that person and also how they would react to their situation and their circumstances.
As always, Mackenzie manages to say exactly what I was going to say, except a complete smart paragraph where mine is going to be peppered with weird jokes and trailing off. But yeah, I agree with you. And I'm very much a Watson, I think. I really relentlessly mythologize my own life. I tend to romanticize things. Jamie and I have a lot in common, and that made it fairly easy for me to get into his shoes while also thinking – I was very deliberate about wanting to write a 17-year-old boy who was more emotionally astute than we give most 17-year-old boys credit for.
You're stealing all my questions.
But that was important to me.
Well, right. I mean, I think what's interesting is that a 17 or 18-year-old boy is not typically someone we would think as being maybe as emotionally advanced or at least as aware of his emotions as Jamie is.
Yeah. And I've worked with so many – I mean, I teach high school students in the summer, smart high school kids, and I work with them on their writing. And these boys are just as soulful and thoughtful and careful with the way that they comport themselves in the world as the girls are. And I think we're really selling our teenage boys short if we can't imagine a world where there are at least some boys out there who are, you know, definitely very tuned into their sense of right and wrong, even if they aren't always making the best decisions. I want to say that they are, you know, in touch with what they're feeling.
When in general, I think we're so quick to box teenagers in general. We tell teenage girls often, you love things too much and you're not allowed to have too many emotions. And I thought about that a lot while writing my first novel, This Monstrous Thing, which is largely about Mary Shelley writing Frankenstein, which she did when she was like 19 years old. And I really think teenage girls are the most like undersold part of the human experience. And with teenage boys, though, too, we tell them you can't be too emotional. And teenage girls, whatever they like, it's the first thing we sort of dismiss as being like, that's uncool because teenage girls like it. It's hard to be a teenager.
It really is. Yeah. You know, and especially boy-girl friendships when you're a teenager, everyone is so determined for you to decide exactly what they are mm-hmm. so it's intelligible to others. And I think that's unfair. I had so many passionate friendships when I was a teenager. My best friend at boarding school was a boy. We did everything together. And I think it's really important to allow for some gray area in these friendships where people have to feel their way through them. And it's okay, you know, if you don't necessarily if you aren't dating the person who's closest to you in your life, even if they are the, you know, the gender that you typically fancy. I think we have to leave some room, some wiggle room in there.
I mean, it's interesting to think about it, and it's, you know, I'm 30 years removed from being 18 here, but one of my probably two closest friends when I was in high school was a girl, and I'm still trying to make sense of what that relationship was. Mm-hmm. Can you separate out the relationships in these books from the romp, or are they part and parcel of the same?
That's
could you write just a romp without this sort of complex relationship at its heart?
Honestly, that's what I sort of started out thinking I was going to do. I started writing this book purely sort of for fun with the honest intention that no one would ever read it. And I just wanted to write sort of – I was having a very hard time with the project I was under contract for. And so I wanted to write something that was just for me and just for fun and sort of to remind myself that writing could be really fun again. And then as I was trying to write this sort of like nonsense, ridiculous historical adventure novel, what ended up coming out of it was this nonsense, ridiculous historical adventure novel with this very complicated relationship between these two young men at its center. And it's complicated for a lot of reasons. And now what I have is I often say it's like the funniest book you'll ever read about like alcoholism and abuse and like chronic illness. So they're sort of – they've become inseparable.
It's a comedy.
It is. It's hilarious.
Alcoholism hasn't been so much fun since Otis the Town Drunk on the Andy Griffith Show. In both of these, there is a lot of, I feel like this is the word, cracking dialogue. And I wondered if there is a trick for each of you to be clever without being too clever, or what we sometimes call clever with a K.
Revision.
Yeah. I think I really have this tendency to want to go for the meta joke every single time, which with my setup, I'm kind of like setting myself up for. You know, my main characters are the great-great-great-grandchildren of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, so they're aware of their ancestry. And it's something I definitely have to rein in a little bit because winks are always fun. But, you know, if you're winking too much, you look like you have something
then
horrible in
blinking.
Your eye.
Yeah.
Then you're just blinking. And I think it's also the humor has to just stay really rooted in the character. It's really fun and tempting, especially for me, to write a scene where like the two of them are just arguing over a box of chocolate for like 40 pages where nothing happens, but I can't let myself do that. Or I can let myself do that and then it has to go away. It has to be deleted.
For me, the humor is such a part of the voice of this novel because humor, especially for the main character whose name is Monty, is sort of his coping mechanism slash way of avoiding dealing with the real and sort of difficult things in his life. So the humor is very integral to who he is and also the arc of the book. And for me, writing humor is all about revising. It's like comic timing, I think, in a play where you have to land it at just the right minute with the right cadence and the right amount of words in a sentence. And the only way to really write characters that are funnier than you is to be able to revise them over and over again. I would never be this witty in my day-to-day life.
I don't know. You're pretty funny in here.
Wow.
But is there a trick to doing that? And I hate making it seem like there are tricks, like you're whipping out, okay, this is how I take this out of my writing arsenal. But you're also doing this and having to be sort of historically sensitive, that you know, the humor has to make sense in its time and place.
Mm-hmm. Well, so much of it too is, I mean, part of writing a historical novel in general is towing the line between what is historically accurate and also what is going to be accessible for modern readers. Because if any historical fiction novel, I think, were 100% historically accurate, modern readers would be so alienated from it that it would be difficult to sort of look past so many of the attitudes and beliefs that are now just like horrifically dated, but were so much a part of the fabric of society back then. So the humor is sort of just like with anything, you have to learn to toe that very difficult line between serving the history and also serving the contemporary readers who are going to be the ones who ultimately are reading and relating to it.
All right. So I want to bring our listeners up to date. Brittany, since we last spoke and you wrote your first of the Charlotte Holmes books, you have left Milwaukee, correct?
I did. My husband has a job in California and we have sadly left for sunnier shores.
You sound awfully happy about being sadly.
You know, we miss Wisconsin a lot, actually. It felt really good driving back today.
If I remember correctly, you grew up in Illinois, is that right?
I did. I grew up in Illinois and then did graduate work in Madison and Milwaukee and bounced back and forth. I love it here so much.
Is there any difference? I mean, it seems like a strange question, but is there any difference being a writer in California and being a writer in the Midwest?
I mean, I can give you the real nuts and bolts answer, which is that you can really afford to be a writer much more so in the Midwest. And for a writer, time really is the most valuable thing in a literal sense that you can have. And so we've kind of had to, you know, figure things out a little bit as we've gone in California. We're actually thinking about coming back for that reason, not because it's not wonderful out there, but because, you know, it's a little bit harder to hack it.
Mackenzie, I was doing a little digging around
and prepping
for this.
What the internet is for.
Yes. Are you the same Mackenzie that had an internship at NPR?
I am the same Mackenzie that interned at NPR.
Wait, don't tell me.
Yes, that's me.
Okay, so let me ask you this. It's not a wait, don't tell me specific question. However,
I was going to say, let me cut you off. Yes, Carl Castle is on my voicemail. We'll just Brie didn't even know that.
Fun fact. Always pick up when I call.
now you're going to want to, like, call her at times you know she's not home. Well, okay, so if the internet is right, as you left, wait, don't tell me, you left with a recipe for a particular spin on the Chipwich.
Oh, yes, the chocolate chip cookie sandwich, yeah.
Yes, so apparently I am the resident ice cream correspondent here, and I feel like it would be remiss if I didn't ask you about that chocolate chip cookie sandwich.
Well, so wait, don't tell me. When I was working there, I don't know if they still do this on their blog. Every Monday would do a sandwich Monday where we would eat a different sandwich that was ridiculous for various reasons. And so I wanted to leave my legacy. And my legacy is actually less the ice cream and more the cookie that was involved in the sandwich. My family has a traditional cookie recipe.
Are these ones you made me?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So this is it's a very specific kind of cookie that the trick to it is you bake it for like 4 to 5 minutes so that it doesn't totally set up, and then you freeze them and then you eat them and they taste like cookie dough. And this is like the primary currency I have in my life is making these cookies for people. And they were legendary all through like my high school and my hometown. And we sold them one summer to fund a trip to D.C. for my sister and I to compete in National History Day. And so it was more that I was using the ice cream as a way to get the cookies into Sandwich Monday. I could have put bologna between them. I was like, we just got to get something between the cookies to make them a sandwich.
Brittany, you have any recipes you want to share?
No, I'm just going to sit here and stare longingly at Mackenzie until she makes me those cookies again.
I'm kind of bumming that.
I mean, I brought my mixer. It's in the car, so I'll have to go get it.
Well, listen, the books are really enjoyable, and chatting with both of you is as well. Let me just say, Bree Cavallaro and Mackenzie Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Mackenzie Lee's latest young adult novel is called The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue. Brittany Cavallaro's latest is called The Last of August. We spoke with him recently before a joint appearance at Boswell Book Company.